This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider immediately.
Hello, I'm Dr. Courtney Sheldon, MD. I'm a board-certified internist and primary care physician. I am the medical director and owner of Shelton Hospitalist Group in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to The Checkup, a new health program on WCLK. I'll discuss important health issues facing all of us using my own experience and that of my guests to give you knowledge you can use to lead a healthier and happier life. Today, we are talking about vaccinations, why they are important, and what you need to know. Our guest is Georgia Gosier, Immunization Coordinator and Perinatal Hepatitis B Coordinator for Fulton County Board of Health, based at the Oak Hill Child, Adolescent, and Family Center. Welcome.
Thank you.
Vaccines, do we need them? Shots. There's nothing worse than taking our children to the pediatrician, knowing your child is going to receive 20 shots in all four extremities. Not only the pain, the fever, the fears, the tears, but also the fear. The fear is what really bothers some parents and children. As a parent, you think, are they going to make my child sick? Are there real and tragic complications like autism from MMR? Is that real? Is this a moneymaker for the pharmacology companies? Well, today on The Checkup, we will discuss vaccines. Our guest today is Georgia Gosier. It's good to see you today.
Thank you.
I'm a parent. Well, as a doctor, I'm a parent. And I was just at the pediatrician's office with my daughter, and just sitting there, and she's getting anxious about getting these shots. She's 4 years old. And I was concerned about the vaccines, you know, and just as a parent. What are all the required vaccinations for children, and why do they have to have them?
Well, I guarantee you your daughter probably wasn't happy with the fact that she had probably had most of the vaccines by the time she reached the doctor's office at age 4.
Yeah, she was.
And there was only a very few left to get. She probably didn't care about that either. But for the most part, we have to have from 10 to 15 required vaccines. By the time she reaches age 6, she will have had most of those. And probably knowing that her dad is a doctor, she's had all of them. And so I would say by the time she's age 6, she probably has had about 21 vaccines. And that's still not the end of it.
What are some of those vaccines?
Well, from birth, she would start out getting hepatitis B, and they would go up to DTAP, diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis, to prevent whooping cough. She would get MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. She would get varicella or chickenpox vaccine. She would get meningitis vaccine. She would get pneumonia. So hepatitis A. So there are quite a number of them. And one of them, rotavirus, she would get as a newborn. They would get those up until 24 weeks, and then that stops. So some of them stop, some are continued.
You know, it's interesting. When I was growing up, if any of my, I have two brothers, no sisters, but anybody in the neighborhood and family, if somebody got chickenpox, we had a chickenpox party. Everybody came over and had it, and then they developed their immunity. We don't see chickenpox anymore.
And that's a good thing.
It is.
Because what we didn't know, and our parents didn't know, I think it was good that they were trying to expose us during the summer months so that we could get it over with and be ready for school when school started. That was the purpose. But now what we've learned as a result of people getting measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, those kinds of diseases, is that they have long-term bad effects. And sometimes it can cause a hearing loss, vision loss. It can affect your generations to come, children that you may want to have. So now we're trying to prevent those diseases. We don't want people to get them.
In some areas where they don't get vaccines, other countries, or particular areas in our country, cities, rural areas. What are some of the complications? Do you see children getting measles, mumps, and rubella?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, because it does happen in the United States still, regardless of our healthcare facilities and everything that we provide here. We do have pockets of generations of people who do get vaccine-preventable diseases that cause some devastating effects. As a matter of fact, you probably have noticed on the news from year to year, sometimes in the Amish communities, where they will get a measles or mump or a rubella outbreak, and it spreads like wildfire. And so that does happen, and it still happens. And we get here in Atlanta metro, there's still a prevalence of pertussis or whooping cough.
And, you know, my training is in internal medicine and pediatrics, and I can recall working in a pediatric intensive care unit where we'd get small children with pertussis, and it was very scary to watch them cough and cough and cough. They become very hypoxic, low oxygen levels, and really they go into a cardiac arrest. And it's really sad to watch, and really small babies, so it's very important.
Absolutely.
What are some of the common side effects of vaccines? You hear so much on television and news, and just even when I switch roles and go from doctor to dad, you kind of sit there, you hesitate, you're scared, you don't want to see your child in pain. But what are some of the common side effects of vaccines that the families and parents should anticipate?
Well, anything that you get by injection, I should say 100% of the time you should expect to get a little pain, and that goes along with it. Sometimes there's redness and a little swelling. Sometimes there's a little fever. Especially in younger children, the parents will notice it more than they do in their older children when they take them for vaccines. But it can happen in all generations, including us. When we go and get our flu shots and our pneumonia shots, we can get a little febrile. We can feel a little bad. What I always recommend is to do the loving things that we do when you have those, what I call common side effects. We rarely ever get something that is considered serious. But anytime a parent notifies us and says that they feel like a vaccine caused any kind of a problem, regardless of what it is, we take it to heart and we do an incident report and submit it to the CDC. And we attribute anything they say, we agree with them and take care of it.
When we talk about adults, I take care of a lot of adults, and they are often fearful of the flu vaccine. Everybody says, I get the flu vaccine, I get the flu, it makes me sick. So I often struggle giving my patients, even the ones that are chronically ill with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, congestive heart failure, serious medical diseases that really benefit, they would really benefit from getting the flu vaccine and the pneumonia vaccine. But I really have struggled sometimes convincing them the benefit of the vaccination. What do you guys do in that situation?
We have the same problems. And for one thing, the fears that they have are real, that they used to have back in the 70s and 80s when they were actually getting live vaccines that sometimes would cause the actual disease they were trying to prevent. People don't forget. They don't forget when people die as a result of getting a flu shot back in the 70s and the 80s. Wow. My entire nursing class got sick in the 70s. Wow. Because of being forced to go and get flu shots in right. order to work with patients. And we wound up being the patients. So it happens. But I'll tell you that today, yes, I do get my flu shot every year. And I celebrate not having the flu because right. I have right. had it. Right. And I know what it's like. And I prefer to have the shot. And sometimes people know that I don't know if they know everything about the flu, but we only prevent 3 or 4 of the flus. There are over 200 varieties that can hit you, and either one of them can raise its ugly head and become the enemy. And we don't vaccinate against all of them. And the only way that you can absolutely know which flu you're fighting is to have a culture done, which is something we don't do often. But you can go to your physician. And they should do a culture before they even try to treat the flu. They need to know which one they're treating against, because sometimes it's not the one you got the shot for.
That's very good information, because A lot of times when we're treating patients with the flu, it's a clinical diagnosis.
Yes.
And there's actually testing out there that will tell you if a patient really has the flu.
Absolutely.
And the viral culture that you're talking about mm-hmm. is also is very important.
Yes, it is.
When you have elderly patients, you know, with congestive heart failure and a lot of other medical problems, getting the flu opens the door for pneumonia, and it can often lead to death. So it's very important, very important.
Yes.
Another vaccine, the shingles vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I often have trouble explaining to patients as well the importance of the shingles vaccine. And they'll say, "Doc, I'm not going to get shingles." What is your protocol, or how do you approach that type of patient for the shingles vaccine as well?
Well, for one thing, too, anytime a client presents in our clinic and they are eligible for a certain kind of vaccine, for instance, those clients who are eligible for high-dose flu vaccines as opposed to low-dose, you always, the first line of defense is the clerical staff who approaches that client. And then you proceed to educate them as they travel through your clinic. You're offering this service whether they take it or not. You give them information on it. You tell them the consequences of what can happen. And if they have questions, we have pictures. And those pictures are worth 10,000 words. When we show them pictures of just one shingles case, and we never show them pictures that are super old, we show them current pictures of somebody, their next door neighbors, their friends, their church members, who have come down with shingles and what it has done as a result of them getting it. And it's not a scare tactic, but they do need to associate with what shingles is. A lot of us don't know, and we've never experienced it, never seen it, don't know what it can do. It is devastating, and they need to know how serious it is. So we do have quite a lot of pictures that we can show them that are current and show them what it does to just people in general.
Yes, because in the clinical setting, I've seen quite a few patients with shingles over the years, very painful.
Yes.
It's unpredictable. Some people have pain post-herpetic neuralgia, and it doesn't go away. Difficult
ever
to treat.
That's right.
And can make patients feel very miserable. So patient education is the key.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Checkup with Dr. Courtney Shelton, MD, and today we are discussing vaccinations with Georgia Cosier. Are there public health facilities in Fulton County that offer immunizations? And where are they located? What is the cause? How can we continue to help our community get educated about immunizations and provide them?
Well, in Fulton County, there are quite a number of public health facilities that provide vaccines for the general public. In the health department, Fulton County Board of Health, we have 5 facilities along with our communicable disease facilities that provide vaccines for their clients. Outside of the health department, there are federally qualified health centers like, I don't know if Atlanta Medical is one of them, but I know that Southside is one of them, and West End Medical Center, which is now Family Centers of Georgia.
Okay.
All of those have vaccines that they can provide to the general public.
And those are free of charge to the patients?
No vaccines are free.
No vaccines are free.
Because okay. It is paid for either by the client or by taxpayers. Now, they sometimes see it as free if they don't have to pay when they receive the vaccines, but somebody's paying for it. So
of
sometimes
course.
We have a reduced fee. Even if you don't get charged for it, it's charged to somebody. So, yeah, it's all vaccines cost.
Okay, so they have kind of like a sliding scale for
and
certain
some
people based on their income.
Absolutely.
That's good.
The number of people in your family counts and the amount of income that family uses.
You mentioned earlier about the Amish community
mm-hmm.
who don't receive immunizations or the conventional health care, mm-hmm. I would assume. I've noticed in my practice, I'm seeing more and more people that are against vaccines and want me to sign documents so their children don't have to have the vaccination, kind of anti-vaxxers, if you'd call them, people who do not believe in vaccines. What is your experience and what are you seeing at the Fulton County Health Department. What are you seeing in that regard?
Well, in public health, that you made a good point, because now, in the past, we never had to have a document that showed that the client refused vaccines. But it's happening so frequently now that we actually had to go and have a legislated form devised by lawyers to say that I protest this vaccine for my child and that I refuse to receive it. There are consequences to that, though. It's not a matter of just walking in and saying, do this for me and I'm leaving. Once they leave, it's just for our benefit. Basically, the lawyers are covering us to show that we did offer what the child needed and that it was refused by the parent. It doesn't clear the child to get into school. It doesn't assist them in any kind of way whatsoever. Okay. And we will not tell the school to let that child in as a result of them refusing vaccines.
So what happens to that child? Because a couple of things come to mind. If the child is not properly vaccinated, mm-hmm. it exposes the risk to other children mm-hmm. who may have immunocompromised diseases and any other the children. Are they still allowed to go into school, or how does that work? How do they handle that?
That is a good question. It's a one-on-one thing with the principals of these schools, and every school is different. And until a principal has experienced an outbreak in their school, sometimes they will let children in with the understanding that if there is an outbreak, that first of all, by law, that child will be expelled first, and that's expelled. Not asked to leave, expelled.
Okay.
They will not be allowed to return to school until the outbreak is over, even if school is still going on. They will not be allowed. If there's ever a new case to come up of something that, for instance, if it's chickenpox and the child didn't get vaccinated and didn't have natural immunity, then that child would be the first expelled. If another child comes down with chickenpox in 2 weeks, that child remains expelled. And it doesn't matter that they didn't cause the disease. It doesn't really matter. It's the fact that they never got vaccinated.
That's interesting, because mm-hmm. you just imagine you send your child to school. College is another one with meningitis. You don't expect them to be exposed to those types of deadly diseases.
No.
And it seemed there'd be a mandate, or to be something, you know, a law or a mandate or something that would force the children to get the immunizations? I mean, because I don't see how you can come to school and not have immunizations, and it almost puts others at risk.
Absolutely. And in the state of Georgia, we are not a state absolutely that recognizes conscientious objections to immunizations. This is one of the states. There are about 15 states that will allow students to come in without being vaccinated, and here in the United States. But the rest of the states do require by law that you present with a certificate of immunizations. We don't give temporary certificates and that kind of thing, and we don't provide waivers. But when a parent refuses, if that child happens to come down with a disease later on, it's for our benefit that we will have asked them to sign a form saying, I refuse this vaccine, because they get amnesia and stuff and they can't remember that I refuse that vaccine because a child has come down with illness. So it's really for our protection that we do those kinds of things.
It's interesting. In the hospitals, often you have to sign a waiver. And if, you know, in my particular hospital, Atlanta Medical Center, if the employees or the physicians don't get a flu shot, then they have to wear a mask for the entire season. You know, flu season, which I always thought was really interesting. You see people, but I'm seeing more and more. It used to be just a few people a couple years ago. Now I'm seeing more and more people during the flu season wearing that mask every day. It's more education. I mean, what do you do in those situations?
I think that's what it is. First of all, when a person is offered anything, I think it should be treated as if it's new. I think when you offer anything to an employee, even a person like me who thinks they know it all about vaccines, I think you should be approached as if you don't know it all and told exactly why I'm offering this to you. In the hospitals and in clinical situations, many, many, many times they're not given a handout even with information on it. Sometimes your patients get more information than you do as the employee, and that can be a fact.
Wow, that's good. Now, I also wanted to ask you, when we hear about MMR and autism, and I've done lots of internet searches, and you see information on both sides.
Oh, yes.
So it becomes very controversial.
Right.
And even when I sat in the pediatrician's office just last week with my daughter, I was a little nervous, thinking, wow, I hear all these things about MMR and autism, and, you know, so this decision I make, is it real? Do you have any additional information about that, or what is Fulton County's stance, the health
department? Well, we practice based upon the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, and we call it ACIP. We don't deviate from that. So it's like they get together and they decide in that committee what vaccines that are safe and what vaccines we should be giving, required or recommended. Once they have left that room and decided what we should be giving for the next year, we're going to do what they recommend. And MMR is one of the strongly recommended vaccines. What we have had, too, is lots and lots and lots of education because of the scare about autism. What we have learned is that, unfortunately, and this is really odd, but autism manifests itself in children from 12 to 15 months of age, and that's exactly the same time we give the MMR vaccine. We can't change that because the minute we decided, and the ACIP came up with this, the minute that you decide not to give MMR just to prove to the parent that it doesn't cause autism, that child's going to come down with measles, mumps, or rubella. And so we weren't able to change the schedule. What we ask parents to do, though, is observe your child. Observe them from day one. I promise you, if the child has a touch of autism or even a lot of it, you will observe it. And you may make excuses for it. You can come up with some kind of idea of, okay, this is a male child, so they're delayed automatically. Some people like to think that about their male children. They like to think female children are a lot smarter and quicker with a lot of things. And sometimes that may be true. But when you notice that there's a behavior that is not normal for a newborn or a child or a toddler, you need to bring it to the physician's attention and not use the MMR as an excuse to delay getting the vaccine or to think that it caused the autism, because I promise you it doesn't.
Gardasil has been kind of some controversy about Gardasil too, which is for the prevention of HPV. When is that recommended in the schedule now for children? I guess it'd be for men and for boys and girls.
Absolutely, for both sexes. It started out with the girls because Gardasil is a good vaccine. It's very good, and it helps to prevent cervical cancer later on in females. Well, it also helps to prevent penile cancer and oral cancer. So it is now offered to both sexes, although it used to be just for females. And it starts at age 9 and it goes up to age 26. And we try to offer it to anyone who presents in our clinics that is in the right age group and allow the parents to make a good sound decision about it. If they don't get the vaccine at that time, then we just give them information on it and let them go in home and digest it and come back and get it.
Has there been any complications with that vaccine? And have you seen how it has had an effect in lowering the risk of cervical cancer, and which would start with the abnormal pap smear? What kind of numbers are we seeing in regards to its effectiveness?
Well, now, I think that it is quite effective, although they're saying that only 1% of our communities that are in the high-risk areas of age, based upon, for instance, 9 to 35 years of age, those high-risk people, they're saying, only gets cancer about 1% of the time. Okay. So that said, we're trying to vaccinate against 1% of our community in that high-risk age group. Secondly, the HPV vaccine has prevented quite a lot of, other than cervical cancers, it also prevents warts. And that's something that once a client gets warts, they have it forever.
That's for life.
And so,
that's
yeah, right. And it helps to prevent that. So it's an excellent vaccine.
Are there any side effects, concerns, issues with that vaccine in regards to, or complications? Are there any complications with that vaccine issue?
Well, it's the side effects. It's the vaccine right now that causes the most pain when it's given.
Okay.
And sometimes, especially with our teenagers, when they get a painful injection, it's better that they are lying down or sitting down and you can keep an eye on them in that chair. You don't escort them back to the waiting room as fast. Sometimes once we inject them, we let them sit right there for about 10 to 15 minutes before standing up because they have been known to faint. And that is one of the things that happens when they stand up and start walking. So we try to prevent that.
Yeah, you don't want them to fall.
No, you don't.
Well, as I always, when I have to switch my hats from doctor to dad, and I'm sitting there in the pediatrician's office just recently, as I've mentioned before, one of the best things, advice, and I'd like you to give would be, what advice do you give to parents who have questions and concerns about immunizations at any time during, even, let's say, during pregnancy or, you know, throughout that infancy and toddlerhood and all those things? What advice do you give parents with questions and concerns about immunizations?
Well, I always suggest to always educate yourself. And they have such access now to things that they didn't used to have in the computer science and that kind of thing. It generates all kinds of information. But even if they don't want to use a computer, they can call the health department and they can ask for anyone who can provide them with information. And they also should ask their providers. Anytime you're before your provider, whoever's providing your child's services, always ask them about those vaccines that they recommend and get information from them.
Our guest is Georgia Gosier, immunization coordinator and perinatal hepatitis B coordinator for Fulton County Board of Health, based at the Oak Hill Child, Adolescent, and Family Center.
Yes.
It was truly a pleasure of having you here. If some of our listeners want to get in contact with you for more information or from the health department, mm-hmm. what can they do?
There's a phone number that they can call, which is our information line. It's 404-612-1205.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us today for The Checkup. I'm Dr. Courtney Shelton. You can listen to this program on demand at WCLK.com. I can be reached at the Shelton Hospitalist Group, located at 315 Boulevard Northeast, Suite 310 in Atlanta. Or you can reach me by phone, 678-705-2355. Or you can like us on our Facebook at Shelton Hospitalist Group, LLC. The Checkup is produced by Dr. Courtney Shelton, Janice Shelton, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. Thanks for listening.